want to thank SOI for sponsoring the yard site share, and everybody who helped, Tobia Miller in particular, who was very helpful. And this is the fourth, this is the fifth yard site share. Doesn't seem possible. Ilui Nishmas Imi Marasi, Rabbanis Miriam Bracha Bas, Rab Meir Yoshua, Allah Shalom. So first I was, as we do every time, I always ask my father if he would grace us to say a few words. And he's agreed, so I appreciate it very much. So first we'll hear from Avi Mori, my father. We'll say a few words, and then we'll begin with the shiur slash.
Our distinguished Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Blau, Rabbi Penner, I thought I saw before. Those are like, there it is. Yeah, I think Rabbi Penner has a special source in that sense. He's both a Talmud of my sons and a student of mine, so that's not so bad. Today, of course, tonight is the fifth Hanukkah night. As my son mentioned, this is the fifth yahrzeit of my beloved wife, Rabbanis Miriam Broche, Bas Harav, Moreno Harav, Meir Yehoshua. The Gemara argues the question, which of course all of you know, in Shabbos, the Gemara argues the question whether, when it comes to the Hanukkah lights, whether it's Peiches V'Hailech or Maisa V'Hailech, whether it goes down or it goes up tangentially. In other words, you start with 8 and you go to 1, or you start with 1 and you go to 8. And obviously, of course, as each one of us knows, the decision clearly is that it's Maisa V'Hailech. The fact is that this concept of Peiches V'Hailech and Moisef V'Hailech is also true on different levels, not only for Hanukkah, but in life itself. The tendency is that in many areas, the more time that passes, the less we remember about the individual or the event that has occurred. But in the case of my beloved Rebbetzin, Zichrono Livracha, the exact opposite true. With her, the halacha is Moisef V'Hailech. As the years go by, her personality, her individuality, her uniqueness becomes that much sharper. God blessed me in many different ways. My mother would have said, poo, 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 can raise eggs on the shaley tide. But the greatest blessing of all was my Rebbetzin, who was a remarkable personality. She was a wife unparalleled. I can't even begin to tell you. God blessed us with 61 and a half years of marital bliss. And I'm not exaggerating as we would say ki hu zeh this much. She was a wonderful mother. And she raised 5 unusual children, including your Rosh Hashiva. Each one, in his or her individuality, a reflection of a part of her personality. Beyond that, we were blessed with wonderful grandchildren. I won't go into numbers of it. My mother wouldn't want me to, so I won't. But each one of them had a special, individual, unique relationship with her. That's absolutely unbelievable. It's not a rule. Beyond that, she was a Rebbetzin. I was a Rav for close to 50 years, 18 years in Toronto, and 30 years in Kew Gardens in Queens. And she was more than a Rebbetzin. She was a friend, and she was a model for so many people. Chavi Baron is here. She goes back with us a few years. And I think she will agree with me when I say that. And she was a teacher. She taught math. But it's amazing to me. It's when I still think about it. You know, if you teach Shahadas or you teach Jewish history, you're able to get to the individual. You can reach out to the individual. But to teach mathematics, she does. She taught it on the highest level. But to teach mathematics and to make a tremendous impact on the individual and the life of the individual, that was remarkable. To this day, I bump into students of hers who came to the Ar Yeshiva afterwards, and without exception will come over to me and say to me, "I was once a student of your wife. You know what she did for me?" And then would enhance every statement that was made. And I miss her every day is not a question. But even more so, the important thing is that it's Moshe V'Heilach. The strength of her memory increases with the years. And it's something that will grow and hopefully will inspire, just as the light of the Hanukkah lamp illuminates. So did she, with her wife, and to her children, and to all of the progeny that are yet to come. Thank you very much.
Missing the if you have a, I guess I lost one. That's some other things. For the sacrifice. Again, thank everybody for coming. Acknowledge the family members. I'm not going to mention everybody by name. A bunch of more here. Appreciate it very much. What I'd like to do is proceed with a shir and the Hagdara of Hoda'a in Chanukah, which is discuss Shitas Rashi and Shitas Rambam, and try to explain that both of them really had an expansive view of the concept of Hoda'a, each in their own way. Especially to project the idea that it's not only a chi of hodah and Chanukah that we're obligated to express, but that they're really yimei halal v'hodah, which is the girsa of some of the Rishonim, especially some of the Rishonim who wrote Sidurim in their discussion of Al HaNisim. But then to speak a little bit more generally, we don't have so much time, about the hashkafic background of the events of Chanukah. Not so much history, because in the presence of my father, I wouldn't presume. But a little bit of history, but especially to understand what the controversies and strifes were about, and how I believe that, according to many Mepharshim, that fits in with the celebration of Chanukah in the timeless discussion of how we engage culture on the one hand, but do so with a full commitment to Torah, and an absolute motivation to enhance and to advance Torah in the process. I was originally going to be speaking about some more specific issues, but I don't think we'll have time for that. So, od chazal namoe. Okay, let's begin. I also want to thank Robbie for putting together the Makoros form. The Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, where you have the sheets here, so we'll try to follow along the shir part. Number one, begins in very unusual fashion, my Chanukah. And of course, my Chanukah is a very rare expression. Usually you don't find that the Gemara asks questions in this way. We question sources, minohani mili, what practices are, but my Chanukah really is something that is unusual and stands out. I always like to interpret it that my here means what is the quintessence. In other words, there are different aspects of the Chanukah story, as we'll discuss. There are really overlapping crises, and one could have focused on any number of those, or all of them. And the Gemara here really wants to distill, they want to define in clearer terms what was at stake and what the focus is of Chanukah. That's, I think, what the translation of my Chanukah is. And then the Gemara goes on to quote partly from Megillas Tainis, Tan Rabbanan b'chafei b'kislev yom b'chanukah taman ya'inun, there are 8 days of Chanukah, delon misfeg b'hon, delon v'lis'anos b'hon, when they came into the Heichal, they defiled all of the oil. Everybody knows the story. I don't have to translate this part. They found only one cruse of oil. There was a miracle that took place. And then the part that we're focused on in the moment, the next year, Kivaum v'asaum yamim tovim v'halal v'hoda. They established these days. They made these days of yamim tovim v'halal v'hoda. The phrase yamim tovim v'halal v'hoda, of course, is what caught everybody's attention, because if indeed my Chanukah means what is the essence of Chanukah, right? And what are we going to focus on, and what is most important, even though there are multiple themes. So this phrase, these phrases, yamim tovim halo v'hoda, seem to provide the answer. But the fact is, even if we look at them superficially, we are immediately aware that the promise of an easy solution is going to elude us, and we now need to understand what yamim tovim halo and hoda are about. Are there three ingredients here? Are there two ingredients here? And what are they? So Rashi, the next point in the Mar Makomos, weighs in on this issue. My Chanukah, Rashi says, al eza nes kava'uha, and then he explains that Hachi Garsinan, the third part, v'asom yamin tovin b'hala v'hoda, lo shasurin b'malacha, ela nikvu, shalo nikvu ela likros halel v'lomar ala nisim b'hoda. So Rashi says that the three are really two. Yom Tov has normally the connotation of Yisra Malacha and Kedushas Hayom. Chanukah doesn't have that. And therefore, obviously what is intended is not Yom Tov, Halal and Hoda, but a Yom Tov of Halal the Hoda. What is Halal and what is Hoda? So Rashi says Halal is Halal, and Hoda is the saying of Al Anisim in Hoda'ah. That's why it's called Hoda'ah. Both in Shemoneh Esrei, and we'll get to it really in Shemoneh Esrei according to Rashi, and by extension, as we'll see, in Birchas HaMazon as well. But a very important question emerges according to Rashi's interpretation, which he doesn't address, and that is that even though he's denying Yom Tov as a separate category, that is, he's denying that there is any kind of Yom Tov here, there aren't three, there are two categories, by suggesting that Yom Tov only introduces Halal and Hoda, right? He implies that Chanukah has a kind of special status or special stature. In other words, it isn't just that on Chanukah they, commanded, the Rabbanan decided, right, that there should be this commemoration of Halal and Hoda, but in fact, there is a characterization here of Chanukah as a Yom Tov Shel Halal V'Hoda. We don't know what this Birya is, this Yom Tov of Halal Shel Hoda. We're not We're not familiar with it. We know Yom Tov and Kedushas Hayom. No one says that Purim, for example, is a Yom Tov of Halav V'Hodah in the same way. And surely that may mean something. And indeed, as I mentioned before, in the various nuschos of Al HaNisim, in the end, some of the Rishonim suggest that the words should be the Ukva'um, Yemei Chanukah, Elu Yemei Halal V'Hodah. That's not the Girsa that we have in our text. It's not in the Abu Draham either, but in some of the Rishonim, they have Yemei Halal V'Hodah, which works very nicely, according to Rashi, that it's a Yom Tov. Rashi's going even further, maybe, a Yom Tov, but these are, it's not just that we do these things on this day, but the day is characterized or defined by these performances. In Masachat Sofrim, Parakhaf Beis, which we have here as well. I'll tell you where in just a second. Probably towards the end. Yeah. In Masachat Sofrim, there's a remarkable passage which is not so understandable, but we get a general impression of it. If you look at Halakha number 18, hey, we're told that Hachazon Tzarech Lomar Kadosh Bishmon Esrei Shol Chanukah. V'chein b'rashi chadashim, v'chein b'chol ha'shomoed, v'pnei shakasu b'hen olas tamid, v'tani rabchia kol yom sheish bo musaf yesh bo kedusha. Ein bo musaf, ein bo kedusha, chutz min ha'chanukah, sh'af api she'ein bo musaf yesh bo kedusha, v'pnei ma, v'pnei sheyesh bo halel. V'yesh omrim, af b'purim, v'pnei sheyesh bo megillah. Okay, so this is a very remarkable Masechet Sofrim. We're not exactly sure what it's talking about or what all the words mean. But the general gist of it seems to be that they set a special Kedusha on Chanukah. We don't do this, obviously, but they set a special Kedusha on Chanukah, just like they said Kedusha on the special Kedusha, not the typical Chol Kedusha on Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed. But there, it's because they speak about Olas Tamid, or in some cases, because there was Musaf. And going forward, Masechet Sofrim seems to say that because there is Hallel on Chanukah, there's a kind of Kedusha to Chanukah, even though it's a Yom Kol. And the fact that it has a Hallel every single day, right, also justifies this additional Kedusha. Okay, so it isn't a Yom Kodesh of Yisra Malacha, obviously, there's no Kiddush, etc. But it's a quasi, it's a Yom, it's a Chalos Yom, and it has special features, special stats. Indeed, the Gemara has this discussion whether maybe every day one should have said Shechayanu on Chanukah, because you're mosif a candle every day. And some of the Mefarshim explain that the real idea was that just like we find in Sukkos, that every day there is an addition to the Karbonos Hayom, so too, in parallel, the saying of Hallel every single day and the adding of a Ner is kind of the equivalent of establishing every single day of Chanukah as having a quasi kind of Kedusha. Again, we don't do either of these things. We don't do the Masechet Sofrim. We don't do this Havamin of the Gemara. But there seems to be some sort of idea that Chanukah isn't just a typical Divrei Sofrim Chiyuv Drabanan. It's something that establishes it as a certain kind of Yom, several Yamim, and that it has a kind of a Kedusha as well. Okay. The Maral asks a very interesting question, both on Rashi and the Rambam. I'll get to it in a second. The Maral just points out that the whole Brisa is very strange, because it would appear from the Brisa that the holiday of Chanukah was engendered because of the mitzvah, because of the nes rather, of the Pach HaShemen, and that triggered a requirement of Halal V'Hodah. And the Maral just says that Me'olam Lamatzino, there's no parallel to this, where the ability to perform a mitzvah, like the Hadlakas HaMenorah in the Beis HaMikdash, was deemed to be of sufficient significance, or I shouldn't say sufficient, the type of significance that would justify creating, you know, a holiday and saying Halal V'Hodah. Halal V'Hodah comes on salvation, comes on in a context quite different. Maral says this defies any kind of analogy that we have. So let's keep that in mind as well. If indeed Rashi is correct, that the saying of Ala Nisan is the definition of Hoda in this context, so it's also worth noting that the text of Ala Nisan is quite intriguing. On the one hand, it's a text that is shared by most of the Rishonim, with some differences. On the other hand, if you look at the earliest sources, Masachat Sofrim again, we see that there's a significant expansion of that text, and surely that is significant as well. If you look at Masachat Sofrim, number 18, Halach Vav, so all we have in Masachat Sofrim is Ba'omrim Bihodaya, right, and the section of Hodah in the Shmon Esrei, and also in Brichas HaMazon, we say, Ukinise Plaos Uchuos Kohanecha, whatever that is. In other words, the text of Al Nisim that we have in Masechet Sofrim is extremely brief and basically says nothing about the nature of what was going on during that era. It focuses very exclusively on the miracle and nothing else. It's also written in the form of a tefillah, right? V'noda lecha l'shimcha, kein asei imanu Hashem Elokeinu v'lokei avoseinu nisim uplaos. And indeed, this part of it registers in a third of the Rishonim who wrote on the Siddur. Most of them have the kind of text that we have, which is just a description. Now, the statement about what took place during the Hanukkah period, but there are some Rishonim, including the Rambam in his Siddur, who have a tefillah component that is attached to it. Al Kain, or just as you were responsible, you triggered salvation for us in this time period, so too, going forward in our history, Rabbeinu Sholem should visit his special Hashgacha and Siyata Deshmaya upon us. But what's fascinating is that while that is part of the original Masechet Sofrim and quite a few Rishonim, including, I believe, Rav Amram Gon, which is one of the earliest Siddur sources that we have, the later sources, not so late, I'm talking about the Tekufa of the Rishonim, many of them took it out, almost as if to say that this Hodah would be in some way compromised, right, in terms of its pure focus, if we turned it into a tefillah. We want not to use this, you know, for the sake of advocating Siyata Deshmaya. We always want Siyata Deshmaya, but more for focusing on the events themselves. But given that that is the case, it's also interesting to note that the content of the Ala Nisim that we have is far more expansive than the Ala Nisim of Masechet Sofrim, but at the same time is very general. And if anybody has it here, I don't have that either. But after saying the initial Ala Nisim v'Alaporkan, we say V'mei Matas Yehov v'Nochan v'Kohen Gadol v'Chashmonai v'Vanav k'sh'om d'malchus Yavon harasha alamcha Yisrael l'hashkicham torasecha u'lahaviram mechukei ritzonecha, right? And from there we go on. Now what's fascinating is that if you look throughout the literature of Chazal, we find much more specific information on what it is that took place. You have it there? Oh, wow. Okay.
So, small.
Okay. So, L'ashkicha, we'll need it for later if I can just keep it. L'ashkicham torasecha la'avir mechukei ritzonecha ve'atal brachamecha harabim ma'atalim beis torah sabrat l'sribam dantas dinam dakantas nikmasam masarta giborim biad chalashim rabim biad ma'atim tmeim biad torim roshoim biad tzadikim zeidim biad oskei torasecha and so on. But again, there's nothing here, no alkane, no tefillah, etc., as we'll discuss in a moment. What's fascinating is that when you think about it, since this is an expanded text already, Ala Nisim has an interesting mix. It could have been much more specific. In throughout the literature of Chazal, we're told about specific persecutions or specific forms that the persecutions took. Bris Milah, Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, there are different lists of what it is that they were denied. Our rendition of Alanisim thinks that it's sufficient to simply say Lahashkicham Torasecha or Lahaviram Michukei Ritzonecha. Even the Rambam in Perek Gimel Halacha Aleph of Hilchos Chanukah, when he speaks about the historical background of this epoch, is a little bit more explicit. B'bayit Sheni Kishemochu, this is 3. Yavon Gozru Gzeres Al Yisrael Bitlu Daitam. Instead of saying Lashkicham Torasecha, Bitlu Daitam, which is far more expansive. In other words, the religion was, they were disallowed to practice religion. V'lo hinicho osam lasuk b'torah u'b'mitzvos. Get to that in a moment. And then he adds, U'poshtu yadam b'mamonam, bitno seyem, nichnesu lahechal, partzu b'pratzos, timua taharos. None of this appears in Alanisim. It's almost as if the text of Alanisim that we have, which is the text that most of the Rishonim accept, almost as it is, intentionally did not want to get too specific, instead opted to emphasize Lahashkicham Torasecha Lahaviram Michukei Ritzonecha. But those phrases themselves, which we'll try to explain, are extremely ambiguous. Lahashkicham Torasecha is just strange. What do you mean to cause them to forget the Torah? The Rambam, in his rendition of the Alanisim, says Levatel Torasa. But most of the Rishonim have Lehashkicha Torasecha or Lashkiach Torasecha, some version of that. What is this memory issue all about? Lehaviram Michukei Ritzonecha is an extremely rare usage. If you look at the Modim Drabanan, there's a Ritzonecha and there's a Chukim. The formulation of Chukei Ritzonecha is unusual, and the Mefarshim al Nesider all address it. So if we're bypassing many of the specific and seemingly more egregious, more emotionally stirring components of the violation of religious freedom in the time of the Hashmonaim, and we're being much more general, why focus on the language Lashkicham Torasecha Lahaviram Mechukei Ritzonecha? Moreover, there are some puzzling elements in Alanisim. Not just the need to decipher, you know, this specific language, and again, let me make it clear. If we hold like Rashi that this is the Hodah, and that it's a Yom Tov of Hallel of the Hodah, so then the focus on Alanisim makes all of these niceties particularly important. It magnifies the significance of the language. In addition, if we look at the text, and I say there's something puzzling, which later Mefarshim Ansider address, but not so much the earlier ones, and that is, in describing the sides of the battle, the Alanisim proclaims, Masarta Giborim Biyad Chalashim, that makes sense, because weak, people who are unarmed, or whose army is feeble and inferior, generally are not going to be victorious against Giborim, valiant warriors. Rabim b'ayviad ma'atim, numbers matter in battles, all things being equal. But then we're told, Tmeim b'yad tahorim, Rishoim b'yad adikim, and Zaydim b'yad oskei sorasecha. So many of the later Mefarshim ask, why is that particularly a miracle? After all, do tahorim fight any less effectively than Tmeim? Or tzadikim than Rishoim? You know, somebody once said, in light of the, doctrine of Torah HaNeshek of the Israeli army, that, maybe the answer is partially yes. You know, it's people with a conscience and people with certain values are more restricted, even in the way that they sometimes wage war. That's a possible answer. Otherwise, it's just puzzling, and we need to understand what that insertion really means. Either way, the Rashi's perspective on Hodah basically raises numerous questions as to what the focus really is. The Rambam, in contrast, did not think that the word Hodah in the Gemara referred to Alanisim. We know that because the Rambam only relates to Alanisim in Hilchos Brachos and in Hilchos Tefillah, one in the context of Birchas Hamazon, the other in the context of Shemoneh Esrei. There's no reference to Alanisim whatsoever in the Rambam's treatment of Hilchos Chanukah. So evidently, he didn't consider that to be the primary expression of Hodah. And indeed, the Rambam's perspective may be partly supported by the Gemara's discussion of Al HaNisim going forward. If you look at number 7, the Gemara says, Yivoylu, Ma'u l'haskir shokhanuka b'drichas ha-mazah. Kiven d'rabbanan hu lomad karinan. Odilma mishum persume nisa mad karina. So the question is, do you say Al HaNisim, right, has kara of Chanukah in Birchas HaMazon or not? It's drabbanan, right, on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's persume nisa. And the Gemara says, Omar Rav Amar Tzchora, we'll get back to this, Omar Abuna Eino Mazkir, Vim Bala Hazkir Mazkir Behoda'a. If he does say it, he should say it in the second section, the Hodah part, but he doesn't really have to. Ravuna Brayd Rabbihuda Ikbal Abay Rava Sarbalad Kuri Dibari Yerushalayim Amal Rav Sheshes Ketfila Matfila Behoda Aprichas Amazon Behoda. That's the Gemara. So what's unusual about this Gemara a little bit is the placement. If you look at number 9, Tosa says Iboilu Ma'u Lahaskir Shal Chanukah Bebrichas Amazon Hema Hak Milsa Havalei Lasuke La'el Gabi Mili Dechanukah. So this is Tosas's question. The Talmud Babli discusses matters of Chanukah, right, in the context of Perek Bamei Madlikin of Masechet Shabbos, and it does so in a framework discussing, you know, the Neiros and the Psilim, etc., but then it takes the opportunity to fully discuss all matters of Chanukah. Then it concludes, it finishes, and then goes back to discussing other matters, and it picks up with a whole series of questions about Hazkaros. Should you mention Rosh Chodesh in the, you know, in the Haftorah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh? Should you mention Shabbos, you know, in the Ilah of Shabbos Yom Kippur, etc.? But this is after the Gemara has already finished discussing in Yoni Chanukah. So Tosas, that's where the Gemara asks the question whether or not Al HaNisim is inserted in Chanukah or not. So Tosas says, well, I don't understand. We just had 3 intensive dapim or so of Inyane Chanukah. It finished. Now we're on to a new topic. So why are we dealing with Chanukah and Birchas HaMazon here and now? I think, potentially, that the Rambam may have been influenced by that problem and that placement to conclude that the Haskara, there is Chanukah, Al HaNisim, is just that, it's a Haskara, it's a reference. But it is not part of the Mechayiv, it's not part of the primary focus of Hodah on Chanukah, because otherwise it would be integrated with the main discussion of Chanukah itself. What does Rashi respond to this question? So Rashi obviously was aware of this question and precluded the difficulty, l'shitaso. If you look at number 8, Rashi says, "Bidrekas hamazon, b'tfila pshitalon, shaharei lahalol ulahodah, nikbu'u kedamrina la'el." I think that Rashi is basically telling us that there are 2 dinim of Al HaNisim, right? One is the din of Al HaNisim in tefillah, and that is not a din, it's not a hazkara, and it's not a din of hazkaras me'ena ma'ora. It is simply the focal point of Hoda'ah on Chanukah, the expression of thanksgiving, as we'll discuss. Then the Gemara was mistapek. Maybe there's another din of Al HaNisim. Maybe it's also a hazkara, just like we mentioned Ritzei on Shabbos and Yalav Yavo on Rosh Chodesh and on Yom Tov. Maybe we should mention Al HaNisim, even separate from its status as one of the Ikar expressions or the Ikar expression of Hodah. Maybe that should be integrated as well. And that the Gemara discusses on Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, because that's a din not in Chanukah, but it's a din in Haskaros. The question is, if you don't have a obligation to eat and you're eating anyway, do you mention Haskar? Just like if you don't have an obligation on Shabbos to say Ne'ilah, but it happens to be Yom Kippur, right? So how do you relate to those kind of coincidences? So I think Rashi, l'shitaso, is basically telling us that the Al HaNisim of Tefillah, at least, maybe the suffix of the Gemara about Berachas HaMazon, is a din in Hodah. As for the rest of the discussion, that's a different matter entirely. The Balei Tosfos l'shitasam do not distinguish in a fundamental way between Al HaNisim and Tefillah and Al HaNisim and Berachas HaMazon. Tosfos, the next one, the second one, Ma'u l'haskir shel Chanukah v'Berachas HaMazon. So according to Rashi, the basis for the Gemara's question is the fact that the takana of or the chiyuv of hodah, that's integrated into tefillah. That has nothing to do with birkas hamazon. But Tosa says, "Bitfila pshitalei demaskim mishum the tefillah bitziborhu v'ikir presume nisa." Of a birkas hamazon shebibayis leker presume nisa kulahai. In other words, Tosa basically says that there's no fundamental difference between al anisim and birkas hamazon and al anisim and tefillah. They're one and the same. The only reason that the Gemara is mistapek is because in one case you have a built-in tzibur in tefillah, and in the other case you do not. That's why Tosus was bothered and didn't have an answer to the question. Well, if this is the equivalent of the alanisim of hoda'ah in the previous sugya, why is it disentangled from it in this later place? Okay. But the truth is that even according to the other Rishonim, what happens to Al-Anisim is quite extraordinary. If you look at the Gemara, as we just read it, in Kabbalah Amid Aleph, so the Gemara says that in Birchas HaMazon, the recitation of Al-Anisim is a Rishus. You don't have to bother. If you do, you should put it into Hodah. However, if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Brachos, Perek Beis, even though the Rambam doesn't think that Al-Nisim is an expression of Hodah, he does expand beyond the Gemara's requirements the significance of this Hazkara. The Rambam says two things. In number 12, the Chanako Bitpurim Mosif Be'emtsa Birchas Ha'aretz Al-Nisim Kederach Shemosif B'Tfilah. Just as you add Al-Nisim and Tfilah, you add it here. It seems to be equating them. Both of them are Hazkaros. But then he says, "V'yomto for Rosh Chodesh Shacholios B'Shabbes Maske Ritzei V'Achlitzenu Tchila V'Yachar Kach Yalav Yavo." Kain Rosh Chodesh Teves Shachol B'Shabbes Maske Alanisim B'Birchas Haaretz Ritzei V'Achlitzenu V'Yalav Yavo B'Nacham. Number one, why does the Rambam mention that this is an obligation? He doesn't say at all that it's a reshus, but this is where you put it. The Lecha Mishnah number 13. I'm not going to read it now, but is very bothered by this. Where did the Rambam get this from? The Gemara seems to say it's a reshus. Moreover, not only does the Rambam think it's not limited to Rishus, the Rambam equates it with Yala V'Yavo and Ritzei. It's only later on in the same Perek Beis, Halacha Yud Gimel, which we have also here in number 14, where the Rambam finally tells you that if you make a mistake in Birkas HaMazon, that you're not Chozer in Al-Anisim. But you're left to think for several Halachos, and certainly his description of the role that Al-Anisim plays, notwithstanding that it's in Birchas Haaretz and that the Gemara says it's a Rishus, is that equal to that, and it's Karim Eina Ma'ora, almost equal to that of Ritzei and Yalav Yavo. Indeed, the Tosefta in Perek Gimel of Brachos, Robbie really did it all here. Is it here? Yeah. 11. Says, Kol Shein Bo Musaf Kagon Chanuk Purim B'Shachris and Mincha Mispalel Shmon Esrei V'Ein the Omrim rather Main Ma'ora Im lo amar ein machzirin also. The kol sheish b'musaf ka rosh chodesh cholamoid shachris mincha mispal yud ches. The omer kedusha seyom ba'avoda rab lazar ba'avoda, etc. This tosefta seems to equate al-anisim with ritzei and yala v'yavo as indeed a me'ena ma'ora. Maybe the Rambam got it from here. The Yerushalmi seems to say that birchas hamazon is does require al-anisim. And even to the point that you would be chozer if you miss it out. The Lecha Mishnah speculates whether or not that might not have been the source for the Rambam that there's a chiyuv to say al-anisim in Birkas HaMazon. But as he points out, the Rambam does mention later in the Perek that it's not ma'akev. Moreover, it would appear from the Yerushalmi that there's a chova to eat on Chanukah, something that the Rambam doesn't say explicitly, although it might be implied, as we'll get to in a second. So it remains a puzzle where the Rambam, how the Rambam knew to significantly expand both the nature and character of Al-Anisim as well as its obligatory nature. This phenomenon of Al-Anisim being, the obligation to say Al-Anisim being intensified, almost as if Chanukah wouldn't be the same, you know, without the recitation of Al-Anisim whenever possible, is echoed in some other Makoros as well. The most remarkable, maybe, of which is the Rav Yom. The Agos Mamunios quotes it here. Second. Yeah. Perek Beis Halacha Yigimel number 15. Aval Rav Yom Pasach, Kivin Denohu Ga'alma Lahazkir, V'gam birech al das lahazkir, shavya alei kechova. V'kiyotu da pasku bahag, gabe tfilis arvis, afo bisho rishos, kivin shehitchel isfalel, shavya alei kechova. So the Rav Yoel says a remarkable thing. He says, just as the Bahag thinks that Tfilas Arvis, though it's a Rishus, since the community accepted upon themselves the Chova, that's how we treat it, so too, Al Anisim B'Birchas Amazon. Very shocking. The Emek Bracha raises the question. He says, listen, when it comes to Tfila, including Tfilas Arvis Rishus, the capacity for Klal Yisrael to accept it, and therefore for its status to change, is rooted in the idea that tefillah exists on the level of nedava. You can bring a korban nedava, you can be mispalel as a nedava, and therefore the concept of shavya le'a kechova applies. But shavya le'a kechova applies in something like al anisim, it's a hazkara bi'alma, there's no chiyuv. It went from being a, if you really want to do it, you can, in the Gemara, to being ma'akev and chozer, according to the Rav Yoel. Similarly, the Shi'iltos, which we also have here, right? The Shi'iltos in Parshas Vayishlach, Yom Hanukkah, says a remarkable thing. Amrav Zera, ki abinim be'rav, right, hab nishtatit for the priti, behad yishbazai, ki nasidna amina, lo tzricha, demadlik yale begoy beisi, in the tefillah you have to mention al anisim. You don't have to mention in berachas hamazon like the Bavli says. My time, tefillah mishum chova hu litzuliyei mechayev. Abu besuda derashus lo chibur rabbanon. Then the Gemara then Shiltas asked the Shabbos v'yontif ma'ikal neimar. In other words, his explanation of why it is that we don't have to be chozer in al anisim in berachas hamazon is because the suda is a sudas rishus. So then the question is, if you don't have to eat, fine. But let's say it's Hanukkah and it's Shabbos, or Rosh Chodesh, or let's say Shabbos. So you are obligated to eat. Since you're obligated to eat, maybe the Al Anisim is obligatory and even ma'akev. That's the question. The Shilta says, Inami Bram, Tzarech Ma'ul is Dazkure, Shal Hanukkah, Bedrechas Amazon, Beshabbos. Toshma Adam Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, Yom Kippurim, Shekhalios, Beshabbos, Hamispalel. Tfilas ni'ila tzorach lahazker shol Shabbos ma'itayma yom shenischai b'chamisha tfilas b'chamesh tfilas. The Shilta says a remarkable thing. He says, what happens if Shabbos falls on Yom Kippur? That's the Gemara's discussion. Do you say in the ni'ila, do you mention Shabbos? The answer is yes, even though the ni'ila doesn't come for Shabbos. Similarly, on Shabbos Chanukah, Al Anisim is Ma'akev, the Birchas Hamazon. Now, certainly you can distinguish between those two things. We know that there's a parallel debate regarding Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. Normally, Rosh Chodesh, the Al Aviyam is not Ma'akev, the Birchas Hamazon. When it's Shabbos, there's a debate, but we've certainly passed that it's not. But once again, what emerges is an expansion of Al Anisim. In other words, there's a certain mentality here that Al Anisim is very crucial to Chanukah, and we keep expanding it. Shulchan Aruch earlier, but quotes it, suggests if you leave out Al Anisim and Birchas Hamazon, it's certainly not Ma'akev. The Gemara said you don't even have to bother to begin with. But you know what? You should integrate it through the Harachamans. And then some of the Mepharshim suggest you should do that in Tefillah too, and it becomes a tremendous debate about Hefsek. These issues, even if we don't possibly like the most extreme of them, echo in the following way. There's a debate among the poskim. What happens, for example, if you have to repeat Birchas Hamazon, let's say you forget Ritzei on Shabbos, or Yalav Yavo on Yom Tov. And if, well, that's going to happen on Chanukah, but on Shabbos, Chanukah, if that happens, when you repeat it, do you have to repeat the Al Anisim or not? So the Magen Avraham and Simen Kuf Pei Zion Sifkat and Gimel says, no, you don't repeat it. It's Azkar B'Alma. We barely say it to begin with. Why should you repeat it? But some of the Achronim, noting that this phenomenon of expanding the obligation of Al Anisim, almost as if without Al Anisim, you know, any opportunity to say Al Anisim is one that we should be, you know, grabbing onto, suggests that at minimum, one could disagree with the Magen Avraham. There's a parallel debate that might have different issues connected with it, whether or not you integrate Alanisim into the Bracha Me'in Shalosh, into Alamechia, or not. The Hagos Maimunios and the Prima Gadim seem to say that we do not, and different reasons are given. Again, that whole discussion reflects this phenomenon that Alanisim is being perceived as something which is crucial, almost indispensable, certainly is being given a status and a stature well beyond that which is warranted by the Talmudic treatment of the topic. And the question is why? What is it about this text? What is it capturing which is so significant? Let me turn in my attention just for a minute to the alternative for Hodah, and that is the Rambam. Here too, nothing to do with Alanisim anymore. Here too, we find a very fascinating phenomenon. How does the Rambam read the Braisa on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis? Kiba'um asa'um yamim tovim, right? Be halel the Hodah. So it's hard to know because the Rambam didn't write a Peirush on the Gemara. But it's not so hard to know because in this particular case, the Rambam accommodated us by seemingly copying this Gemara in one of his halachos. In Perek Gimel Halacha Gimel, the Rambam says, "Mipnei zeit kiru chachamim shebaosa dor shiushmona sayamim ha'elu shetkilasan milel chamisha v'esrin v'kislev yemei simcha v'halel umadlikim mem neros ba'erev al pischei bat v'cholayla v'layla mishmona salelos laharos ulegalos esaneitz." Beautiful language of the Rambam. Now, what do you mean with Bnei Zeit Kinu? That's the response to the word my Chanukah. How do we know that? Because then he's basically quoting the words of Megillas Tainis, Sheyushmones Yomim Eilu Shetchilasa Milel Yomid Chanukah Tmanya Inhun, right, etc. There's a quotation of the Braisa, and then it's Braisa's formulation of Yom Tov Halel Hodah. The Rambam says Yimei Simcha the Halel, Umadlikin by Maneros, Be'erev, Al Pischei Habatim. So it would seem that the Rambam has the following interpretation. We know that he didn't interpret Hoda'ah the way that Rashi did. Apparently, he didn't interpret the word Yom Tov the way Rashi did either. The word Yom Tov for the Rambam refers to Simcha. And the Achronim discuss whether, according to the Rambam, there might not be a requirement, for example, on Chanukah of a Seuda, which could rebalance the whole debate about Alanisim and being Chozer and the nature of the day and so on. In any case, that's one aspect. The Hallel is self-explanatory. Hallel is Hallel. The Rambam actually chose to deal with Hilchos Hallel in the middle of Hilchos Chanukah. Even though he could have discussed Hallel earlier, one would have thought that he would have in the Doraisa context of Hilchos Yom Tov. The decision to wait and to integrate it into Hilchos Chanukah seems to establish that Hallel is a critical component of Chanukah and that somehow Chanukah also Hallel belongs to Chanukah as well. But the third ingredient, the one we're focused on, Hodah, is the most intriguing. It would appear, if we're right about the reading of the Braisa, and other Mefarshim said this as well, told the Rav, came to this conclusion as well, and that is that when the Rambam says Madlikim b'maneros be'erav al piskei abatim b'chalayla b'layla mishmor tzayom laharis ulegalos esaneis, which is a big sentence to swallow, the reason that it's written that way, laharis ulegalos esaneis, is because this is the Rambam's way of saying that Hoda'ah is expressed in the Maisa Mitzvah of Neros Chanukah. And this is affirmed by the Rambam's formulation in Perek Dalet Halacha Yud Beis. Do we not have that, or we do? Yeah. Mitzvah Sner Chanukah Mitzvah Chaviva Hi Ad Ma'od The Tzarech Adam Lehizayir Bo Kedei Lehodia Hanes Ulehosif B'Shevach HaKel V'Hodaya Lo Alanisim She'asol Adam Afilo Ein Lo Mayocha Leminat Tzaka Shor Lemocha Ksuso Lokeach Shemen V'Neiro Sumadlik. So here the Rambam says, number one, that Mitzvah Sner Chanukah is Chaviva Ma'od. Get that in a second. Lahodia hanes or lahosif b'shevach hakel v'hodaya. No, the word hodaya here is hodah. So the Rambam explicitly identifies hadlakas neros with hodah. But that, of course, is fascinating because it is the flip side problem of the Maharal. Maharal said, since when do we legislate holidays or Hallel and Hodah because we had a miracle that enabled us to perform a mitzvah? And for the Rambam, not only is that true, but the expression of Hodah is by means of the Maisa Mitzvah of Halakas Neiros Chanukah, something that is totally unprecedented. But the Rambam's view, right, is even more remarkable than that. As we noted, the Rambam says that this is a mitzvah that is chaviva hiad ma'od, right? Obviously, putting it in a different level. All mitzvahs should be chavivos, but this one is ad ma'od. And the Rambam is mechadesh, and then the Nosa Kalim try to find the source, that adam mocher ksuso, even if you have to sell your clothes, you'll do so in order to perform this particular mitzvah. A very big chiddush of the Rambam. But in addition to that, there is evidence that the Rambam believes not only that Neros Chanukah is Hoda'ah, but that Hallel and Neros Chanukah are one and the same, that they are two sides of the same coin. Well, we already noted that the Rambam treats Dinei Hallel in Hilchos Chanukah when he could have and should have analyzed it earlier in Hilchos Yom Tov, but it's much more than that. The fact is that in the Koteret to Hilchos Chanukah, the Rambam counts Megillah and Chanukah two mitzvos, Megillah and Neiros Chanukah. Even though he deals with the rules of Hallel, that too is a mitzvah midibrei sofrim, the Rambam never says that that's one of the three, he only has two mitzvahs. In other words, the Rambam's Neiros Chanukah is the equivalent of Hallel. Moreover, the Rambam actually is mafsik between the bracha and the hadlaka with Hallel. Meaning, if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalid, he says, Kol shechayi b'kriyas ha-megillah chayi b'hadlakas ner Chanukah, hamad l'kosu b'layla rishon mevarach gimel brachos ha-eluhayn, asher k'tsham tzatzur t'vanu l'hadlik ner Chanukah, she'asa nisan l'avo seinu. He has the brachos of Chanukah. The next halakha that we would have expected would be the halakha of Neiros Chanukah. Instead it's, b'chol yom b'yom mishmonis yom elu gomri m'sahalel u'mevarach l'fanav baruch atah Hashem elokeinu melech ha'olam asher k'tishonu b'tzosu v'tzivanu l'gmar sahalel. In other words, instead of Hadlokas Neiros, you have Birchas Hallel. Moreover, the Rambam goes on to say that Afal Pisha Kriyas Hallel Mitzvah Midibrei Sofrim Mevarech Ala Asher Kedshanu B'Mitzvos V'Tzivanu Kederach Shemevarech Ala Megillah V'Ala Eruv. Now, in the Gemara in Shabbos, the Gemara asks, when it talks about the text of Birchas Chanukah, it says Asher Kedshanu B'Mitzvos V'Tzivanu, the Gemara says Heichan Tzivanu. This is a Din Drabanan. So the Gemara says it's based on Losasur, Shalavicha, etc. The Gemara's discussion is about Birchas, Hadlokas, Ner Chanukah. The Rambam, when he copies it down in Hilchos Chanukah, attributes it not to Neiros Chanukah but to Hallel. A very remarkable thing. So he's literally mapsik between Birchas Hallel, Birchas Neiros Chanukah, and Hadlokas Neiros Chanukah, which, by the way, he picks up with in Perek Dalet Halakha Aleph. The last halakha in Hilchos Chanukah Perek Gimel is Halakha Yudalid. You'll see that that's still about Hallel. HaKorei Omer Ona Hashem Oshiana Ze'ona Acharav. These are Dinei Hallel. The next halakha after finishing Dinei Hallel is the halakha of Hadlokas Neiros Kama Neiros Umadlik B'Chanukah. With all of this, the Rambam clearly illustrated his view that Neiros Chanukah embodies both Hallel and Hoda'ah together. And that's exactly what he says in Perek Dalet Halacha Yud Beis. He speaks of Hallel and Hoda'ah both as being expressions of this Hadlaka. But it defies, as I say, analogy. There's no other mitzvah that we know of that is treated in this fashion. And the question is why? So now I'd like to take a step back. Both Rashi and Rambam's interpretation of Hoda'ah are exceedingly expansive and consequential. Does the scope of this particular Yeshua and the nace involved in it alone account for and justify this special treatment? Or is there perhaps a much broader and more critical theme in Yahadus that is being projected here. What I'd like to suggest is that indeed, Al HaNisim for Rashi, and for some of the other Mepharshim as well, but especially for Rashi, and Hadlokas Neros, the Hadlokah of the menorah on Chanukah, both the initial Nes and the remembrance of that, captures and crystallizes the broader nature and stakes of the struggle at the time of the Chashmonaim, and of course as a timeless theme throughout Judaism. The Chanukah story is certainly a specific conflict that was precipitated by a series of historical events, but it's also one that reflects an underlying perennial drama. The enduring challenge, hence the title, of principled, integrated halachic commitment as Torah life engages the rest of the world, and particularly other cultures. Bayamim Mahem, Bazman Azeh. The Chanukah drama has numerous overlapping layers, each of which is consequential, each of which, in some way or another, is addressed in the responses of Al HaNisim and the menorah. The first, of course, is the war, a crisis of physical survival. Once there is a war and a military conflict, forgetting what motivates the war, survival becomes the most urgent call of the day. Al HaGvuros, Al HaMulchamos, Al HaNisim, the focus in Masechet Sofrim in its brief rendition, Rabin by Biad Ba'atim, Giborim Biad Chaloshim, right, the things that make sense, and indeed, for some, the military victory is even primary, or it's partial, maybe it's one of the 8 days, Beis Yosef's question, etc. Mostly, however, the consensus is that Chanukah focuses not on physical survival and crisis, but on spiritual danger. The Levush and the Bach note that that's why, according to the Maram Rutenberg, there is no Chiyuv Suda. But this perspective of spiritual challenge is varied as well. On the one hand, there is the specific targeting of persecutions, gzeros, crucial, and general components as well of Avodas Hashem. This constitutes one act of spiritual persecution, right? Narrowly triggering the halachic guidelines of Mesiras Nefesh, something I spoke about last year in this Yahrzeit Shir. When do you say Yehoreg Val Yavor if you can't perform a particular mitzvah, about Azar Gili Roy Shvichas Damim, and the broader idea of Shas Hashmad, time of religious crisis, in which even so-called lesser mitzvos trigger a response of Yehoreg Val Yavor. That's one kind of spiritual crisis, the targeting of either critical or even lesser components of Avodas Hashem. But this impact transcends the narrow particular gzeirah in two ways. Number one, the idea of targeting particular mitzvos undercuts the integrity of halacha as a holistic and comprehensive system, which demands a total commitment. The crucial dimension of the Torah is precisely in the integration of all aspects of this system. Challenging the totality of the system, creating a disjointed system, is basically a form of destroying or savaging the system. But it's more than that as well. The particular targets, specifically, of Greek persecution represent a pattern of acculturation, probably part of a very specific strategy to promote the Hellenistic agenda, Greek values. This pattern of targeting, which could be demonstrated by analyzing the details, many people have. I'll refer in a couple of moments to an essay that Rav Hirsch wrote on Hellenism and Judaism, where he tries to do this, Shabbos and Mila and Dinim and Rosh Chodesh and so on. But they represent clearly not just crucial individual norms, but a program and even a Kulturkampf, cultural war, with much wider repercussions. Significantly, the Greek government recognized something that Jews don't always, that is that halacha is not merely a system of comprehensive laws and obligations, but one that constitutes a Weltanschauung, a worldview, a philosophy, in which the norms reflect values, and the goal is to cultivate a halachic persona. to embrace the system, not only to be loyal to it, but to be transformed by it, to be immersed in it, to live it and to breathe it, to be attuned to it. The targeting of Talmud Torah in particular, which is accentuated in all versions of Al HaNisim, either Lahashkicham or Levatlo, is critical not merely because of its supreme axiological status, Keneged Kulam, but also because it is the foundation of values and the vehicle par excellence of cultivating a Torah personality, an Ish HaLacha, embracing that vigorously. Moreover, while the immediate focus of the crisis in salvation spotlighted the persecutions and the military conflict with Antiochus and with his government, the historical background of internal debate, friction, internecine ideological strife between traditional and Hellenistic Jews is a crucial backdrop for the entire epoch of Chanukah. There is much debate. I'll leave it to the professional historians to fill in the details about the intensity of penetration of Hellenistic culture in this period from after Alexander till the Chanukah time. Especially in Yerushalayim and Judea, there's a wide range of historical opinion about the relationship between pragmatic, economic, and political considerations as opposed to principled ideological beliefs. However, it is evident that during this period, right before the Xeros of Antiochus, experienced a substantial escalation, both substantively and symbolically, of the Hellenization of the Jewish community. And that was especially promoted by the aristocratic and economic elite that threatened the unity and the integrity of Torah life. The internal Hellenization and corruption of the Jewish community played a crucial role in paving the way for these gzeros, even politically. But the broader dangers of Lahashkicham Torah Secha, then, were not confined to the gzeros. They were acutely also, maybe even primarily, engendered by the impact of internal cultural contamination of Torah life by unconstrained and in some cases more moderate but still problematic Hellenized Jews whose cultural interaction compromised the integrity of Torah life. It's important to assess the Yeshua of Chanukah in this light. While the crisis of persecution is obviously more pressing and flagrant, the lure of a corruption of cultural penetration can be far more insidious and far more pernicious and damaging. Numerous Mefarshim, the Maral among them, perceive the Chanukah theme as an epic struggle between two great intellectual and cultural rivals, Judaism and Greek thought. Mentioned before that Rav Hirsch has a very interesting essay in which he presents his perspective, which is shared by many, and there are all sorts of alternative perspectives on exactly what differentiated Greek and Jewish cultural thought. But his is that there were three, essentially tried to identify three groups: the pre-Hellenic, Hellenic, and of course classical Jewish thinking. His scheme of intellectual history focuses on the oldest prophecy or vision known to us, Yaft Elokim Liefes V'yishkon Ba'al Eshem, in which the Rabbeinu Sholem declares that he'll open the mind of Yefet Greek culture for intellectual mastery, but he'll take his company only with shame. In other words, a perennial two forces competing on the world stage. Both are charged with the objective mission of elevating man to attain Tzelem Elokim. Both are charged with educating and eradicating Cham, who represents unfettered sensuality, Megala Ervas Aviv. And the question is, how does this play out in the history of the world? Pre-Hellenic culture focuses on man trying to survive barely in an intimidating environment that he doesn't control, in which external supernatural forces, discrete, powerful, independent, beyond his control, really operate or prevail. He needs to appease, to surrender in order to survive. He essentially is impotent and insignificant. Then comes the Hellenistic model. The Hellenistic mind focuses inwardly, homocentrically, His focus and his aspiration for perfection is total, and even marshals God, or in the case of the Greeks, the gods themselves, as a tool and a means for human satisfaction and for human accomplishment and attainment. In other words, Greek thought, with its very lofty goals, essentially turns religion into self-worship and satisfaction and self-aggrandizement. This spirit creates civilized and joyful free men, but at the same time creates equally difficulties and challenges. Rav Hirsch Kedarko explicitly states that the Yefet expression is noble, that it's a welcome contribution to the world, one to be rejoiced, and part of the harmony and the beauty of the Bria itself to be cherished and cultivated. But equally, it's important to understand that with all of its positive portrayal, Greek culture is only a fraction of the truth, prone to error and illusion, can be the source of degeneration and decay. It stimulates only the mind, but is unable, to quote him, to generate truth. The impact of shame's culture on the world, the focus on the Ribono Shel Olam, total surrender to him, a unified or integrated source of creation, that's why Yichud Hashem is so important, all of the discrete forces, multiple gods, the god of this, the god of that, of Greece, are of course an absolute heresy for shame, for Klal Yisrael, for Judaism. Instead, Yichud Hashem providing focus and harmony, purpose beyond man. The goal of man is not to exploit the gods, but to surrender to the higher purpose and to the unification of the single God with whom one can have a relationship and whose relationship is the purpose of mankind. Yafet's focus is elevated by Shem's commitment, his surrender, and acknowledgement of unity. Shem's teachings about the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the physical divine directed focus of spiritual life, free man from the pre-Hellenic belief of an unapproachable authority of powerful gods, and equally frees man from the Hellenic delusion which transforms human characteristics into godly attributes. That's his brief analysis. Bertrand Russell and 10 other thinkers, each one has a slightly different way in which they draw the line. But however you describe it, the fundamental Greek-Jewish divide exemplifies broader issues of religious integrity and intellectual cultural engagement that is ubiquitous to life and has singular parameters in Jewish life, therefore also transcending the specifics of Greek-Jewish rivalry itself, as I said, subject to much discussion and debate. The menorah, especially according to the Rambam, who calls it in Perek Gimel Halach Aleph the Ner HaMaracha, and the intriguing text of Alanisim that we just discussed, an expansion from Masechet Sofrim, a broadening and a generalizing from the list of Gzeros that we know of, and an intriguing series of formulations, basically reflect the vulnerable targets of any Kulturkampf, this one specifically, but all, as well as the mechanisms that may fortify halachic integrity, even as they foster appropriate, constructive, beneficial cultural interaction. So let me explain briefly. The menorah. In Chazal, the menorah is perceived as the foremost symbol of Torah, foundation of commitment, and especially of Pilpula Shel Torah, of Talmud Torah. The foundation of inculcating values, cultivating religious personality, is by means of Talmud Torah, and the menorah highlights and symbolically embodies that aspiration. But additionally, the fact is that the menorah is associated with Torah Shebaal Peh, and according to the Netziv, I had the text, but I seem to have lost that group of papers. The Netziv in Parshas Bahaloscha, and throughout all of his works, develops the idea that the concept of Mesorah and the concept of interaction, the dialectic that dictates the rules of engagement, if you will, with other cultures, but establishes the primacy of Torah and the purpose of Torah, establishes Torah as the filter and the prism, even as it allows for a rich cultural interchange and exchange is symbolized by the menorah. Chazal perceived the menorah as emblematic of a dialectic perspective on other disciplines, knowledge, and even cultures, different branches, but all faced in the same direction for the same goal, the goal of Avodas Hashem and the integrity, the miksha achas of a holistic Jewish life. In sharp contrast to the discrete gods and the notion of compartmentalization that, according to most perspectives, was central to Greek thought, the menorah highlights in its miksha achas and in its focus the Torah's perspective of integration, of a holistic view, one which is defined by clear objectives and which has the ambition of transforming man's very focus. In other words, the menorah as Torah is not only Ikar versus Tophel, but it is the mediator and the filter that determines the viability of interaction and that validates enhanced synergies. The Ne'er Samaracha that the Rambam refers to highlights the psukim in Parshas Tetzaveh, where the menorah completes the Mishkan, but even more so, I don't have time to develop this now, the Rambam's own perspective on Yaroch es Haneros, which is the comprehensiveness and consistency of the menorah. The Rambam's view, unlike other Rishonim, based on the idea of Der Maracha, was that the menorah has to be lit not only at night but during the day, that the Hatavas Haneros is the Ikar, the preparation and the total servicing of the menorah is part and parcel of all of that. In other words, the total integration of details, which is very much focused towards a single goal, but a goal of transforming man and ascribing meaning to his life. Let's turn to Alanisim. We noted that the phrase "Lahashkicham Torasecha Laharam Michukei Ritzonecha" is particularly unusual, and it's interesting that that's the most common and that's the normative text, that it replaced specifics or maybe more anticipated generalities. And the question is why? But I think that the answer is that it invokes, as the Talmud of the Ramban noted, the psukim that refer to Maimed Har Sinai, the prohibition to forget the experience of Maimed Har Sinai. Moreover, it basically establishes that the focus is not on details, but on a certain ethos, a certain perspective, the perspective of Masorah, the interaction and integration, again, of the various aspects of Torah, which come together as a single Weltanschauung when properly understood and properly interpreted. The prohibition to forget the experience at Sinai, which according to the Ramban's Talmud is the true meaning of Lahashkicham Torasecha, is not a difficulty of content. We're not worried that we're going to forget details of the halacha. But a more intangible, indescribable, and inarticulate divine experience, which is of course rooted in Yiras Shamayim. The Yiras Shamayim and the perspective of what happened at that moment, the capacity for man to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but only by means of the Torah that he reveals, and because it was revealed once, at once, and through the medium of the father of Masorah, Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Amshel Shlomo, the presence of Klal Yisrael at Maimed Har Sinai is the source for the total range of what the Masorah is, Elu ve'Elu, Divrei Elokim Chaim. The concern was that not so much there'll be a forgetting of details, but that sensibility, that ethos, could be lost if cultural exchanges were able to corrupt the integrity of Torah commitment. After all, cultural exposures can be, at minimum, confusing. They demand mechanisms that filter, that define the line of demarcation, making sure that the exchange is constructive, enhancing, or at least neutral rather than destructive. And they depend on these sensibilities, Shalot Tishkach, the link to Maimed Har Sinai in all of its dimensions. Famous Gemara in Tzmura that I like to quote a lot, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, Klal Yisrael all of a sudden had collective amnesia. And once again, clearly, the idea is not the loss of details, but the loss of Mesorah, the knowledge, the expertise, the confidence, the instinct, the attunement to know how to take this total package and apply it dynamically to new circumstances, to new situations. Shikha is a concept that appears in the Torah in numerous contexts. Saramashkin vayishkacheyu, Amalek, Vidui Maisras, Velo Shakachti, and especially in the end of the Torah in Devarim and Hazinu, where the Ribbono Shel Olam, as Moshe Rabbeinu is leaving the scene, and they're in a state of panic, he's the father of Mesorah, he's the one who puts it all together. They're promised, Shelo Tishkach HaTorah, the Torah will never be forgotten from collective, corporate Klal Yisrael. In other words, there's a Mesorah of individuals, Ish Mipi Ish, there's a Mesorah of the collectivity of all of Bnei Yisrael. It's that shikha that becomes jeopardized when the proper filters and the proper concerns are not integrated into cultural interaction. In other words, not memory, but mentality, deep identity, and association. Neuroscientists in our era have demonstrated, David Kahneman one, many others, that memory is not a videotape of the brain. It's filed on the basis of associations. Memory is mostly a function of impact and internalization. Deep bonds, convictions, and a feeling or an attunement for the parameters and the system. This is true in every one of these halachic contexts, and this is exactly what is jeopardized by a disjointed Yadus due to persecutions, but in some cases, even more by uncritical value exchanges that threaten to corrupt the integrity of the system. The Mishnah in Masechet Avos says that if a person is shocheach davar echad min haTorah, he's mischayev benafsho. And quotes, again, the shikha pasuk of Maimed Har Sinai. On the surface, it seems very harsh. After all, people's memories are not perfect, especially if they're really not storing the videotape. Everybody forgets things. The Mishnah goes on to say that obviously if one was an onus, if this was not a result of some sort of carelessness, neglect, etc., then the impact is different. But it raises a question, what is the Mishnah talking about? Why Mitzchayi B'Nafsha? But if we understand that the Shikha of Maimed Har Sinai and Matan Torah is not about details, it's not about memory loss, it's about losing a touchstone, it's about losing perspective, it's about being disconnected from the more amorphous and maybe less mathematical and precise dinim of the Torah. But that mentality, the authority and authenticity that underpins that mentality, the Moshe Rabbeinu and what he left, L'dorei Doros, the Yiras Shamayim of Maimed Har Sinai, then indeed one can understand that being negligent, not being rigorous, not taking steps to safeguard, is almost criminal. A person who allows himself to forget is a person who perceives his commitment to Yadus in terms of empty slogans, orthodox practice, but not really values, and certainly not the ambition of internalizing and transforming into an Oved Hashem. Xeros, or cultural corruption, that whittles away at and marginalizes and technologizes norms and observance, fossilizes the Torah by stripping it of its transcendent significance, reducing it to remote and unsustainable memories. It becomes mitzvat anashim belum mada, empty or formal, nostalgic gestures that are fundamentally lacking in a greater holistic content or values, something which actually is eminently forgettable. Orthodox practice without orthodox values is not an invention of the 21st century. Bayamim ahem, bazman hazeh. Hellenism was hardly a univocal ideology. There wasn't just one group of Hellenists. Part of its range included those who also adopted the values of surrounding culture, even as they clung, but ceremoniously and nostalgically, to some or even most of Jewish practices. Sadly, this was not a sustainable strategy, and it too was conducive to shikha in all of its ramifications. Only a halachic commitment that is nourished by the experience and the Yiras Shamayim and the Mesorah perspective of Sinai, the Yiras Shamayim and Mesorah aspects that infuse dynamism into Torah life, l'dorei doros, can fortify against cultural corruption, can properly mediate and then turn constructive cultural engagement. And that's exactly the meaning of lahaviram mechukei ritzonecha. While some of Farshim explain that it just means the important targeted persecutions. Others explain that the word chukim here is intentional. Chok chakakti lecha, ein lecha rishus laharher acharai, hasaton va'umos ha'olam mekatrigin alav. Chukim are always the vulnerability. Chukim constitute the inner logic. And as the Mishnah says, batel ritzoncha lirtzono. Surrendering to the values of the Ribbono Shel Olam, even when they're not consistent with prevailing cultural norms, is the ultimate act of surrender. The inner logic of halacha is often at odds with, sometimes fully incompatible with, other systems. Ritzoncha invokes that idea of batel ritzoncha in dramatic fashion. Invariably, these are the most vulnerable targets of persecutions or cultural challenges that are not pursued with the proper guidelines. As a divine system that fashions our very persona, the halacha transcends and therefore doesn't need to conform to prevailing social norms, no matter how contemporaneously compelling or politically correct. No one has articulated this position more forcefully and more with greater sense of articulation than the Rav Zatzal. It's really his most important contribution to Jewish thought, the foundation of each halacha, and implicit in everything that he wrote and said. The preeminent fault line in a Kulturkampf is precisely the capacity to remain faithful in practice and especially in confidence and belief to and protective of the singular and timeless principles of the Torah itself. Unshakable conviction is the sine qua non for cultural engagement. In that same essay in Judaism and Hellenism, Rav Hirsch notes that while Jewish law is open to and encourages cultural interaction, sees it as beneficial, the Torah's inner logic has to dictate and define the encounter. Encapsulating this approach by invoking the dictum that my father would often quote in drashos, albeit not as pshat, kavata itim la Torah. Did you set the time to the Torah or the Torah to the times? Alanisim accentuates the role of oske Torah secha as well. Invoking the Ashkenazic version of Birchas HaTorah, the rabbinic principle of osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah, which once again navigates interrelationships of competing obligations, each of which is compelling in its own right, but where you need a perspective that is bigger than the sum of its parts, that is transcendent, to understand how to best accomplish the triage strategically and beneficially. Integration, holistic study of Torah, is the reason that Birchas HaTorah is introduced with Lasok B'Dibrei Torah. After all, not just observance, but study, values, the foundation of developing a religious persona. When we say Birchas HaTorah once a day, we don't have to worry about a hefsek, a big topic in the halacha, precisely because we focus not merely on technical study or technical observance, but on the immersive aspect of Esek HaTorah, which one carries with him in business, in cultural engagements, etc., as it should be. By formulating the celebration of Chanukah miracle in terms of Zeidim biad oske Torah secha and Tmeim biad tahorim and Rishoyim biad tzadikim, notwithstanding the absence of any military edge, Alan Nisim unequivocally underscores precisely this dimension of Kulturkampf that we have amplified. Precisely these core underlying issues, rooted in specific history, but endemic to all of religious life, the themes and celebration of Chanukah actually are enduring and chavivin heim ad ma'od. They provide for us l'dorei doros bayamim haheim bazman hazeh a perspective and a policy of how to move forward, how to find ways not only to be constructive, but for a beneficial involvement in the world around us. Neiros Chanukah and Al HaNisim emerge as compelling expressions not only of Hodah, but of Hodah and Hallel, a basis for Yemei Hallel v'Hodah, not Kedushas HaYom in the formal sense, but focusing on an issue that is so important that indeed it neutralizes the Maral's question as well. Every society or culture with a coherent identity has to contend with rival values and establish policies and parameters of that interaction that will enhance or at least safeguard its cherished principles. Halachic life, reflected in the Hanukkah crisis and its resolution, imposes additional complexities. On the one hand, Yadus's universalistic dimension, the role of Nesamim, Tikkun Olam, the common perspective on humanity reflected in the Tfilos of the Yomim Noraim and the concept of Tzelem Elokim, do promote constructive interaction as a critical and important value. There's an illustrious record of constructive interchange at all phases of our history, in Chazal, in the Gonim, in the Rishonim, in the Achronim, down to the Torah Mada enterprise of our yeshiva this very day. Yavan and Yefet, as long as it's connected to shame, with filters and proper prisms, is something that is extremely beneficial. At the same time, it's important to know that halakhic life is rooted in comprehensive, immutable divine norms that are pre- and post-historical, and that demand loyalty, fidelity, that constitute a full and demanding lifestyle. While other systems, certainly secular systems, even idealistic ones, are much more amenable to change, compromise, or uncritical synergies. The trick then is to be faithful to the principles, to be fully committed to an integrity of the Kedusha of the Torah, seeing that as our goal and our objective, and at the same time harnessing that to deepening our Mesorah by constructive interchanges with other cultures. Beyond the issue of legal obligation, halakhic life constitutes a foundation, the only foundation, for meaningful existence. It provides the philosophic foundation, articulated variously by many Chachmei Mesorah, the Rambam's Achdut HaMaskil VaHamuskal, which otherwise would make theologically challenging or maybe even possible, impossible, a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeZakas Es Yisrael, understood this way, means that the Torah is the means by which we can have what otherwise would be impossible, a connection with, derive meaning from, our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the purpose of our existence. We need therefore to cherish this gift, to safeguard it, and to project it centrally in everything that we do. That means not only care and scrupulous vigilance when it comes to implementing the norms, but it means doing what the Rabban did, extracting the values from those norms, and doing what the Rav did, developing a Weltanschauung, an Ish Halacha perspective towards all of it. That is a sine qua non for beneficial interaction with other societies and cultures, which can deepen and enhance Torah itself. I sometimes call it Torah Plus. The formula of engagement and halachic integrity has characterized Klal Yisrael from its very inception. It's late, so I'm not going to give you the examples. Maisa Avos Simon Labanim, Avraham and Yaakov and Moshe. Rav Hirsch has an interesting comment where he notes that the Hashgacha placed Klal Yisrael always in the most sophisticated societies, the ones on the cutting edge of culture, so there could be these exchanges, albeit run by, determined by, those who understood the parameters, those who were able to identify the boundaries and also the possibilities of meaningful integration. We'll skip that because it's late. Let me just conclude. I was going to speak about the issues of today and the challenges that we face. I'll have to leave that for another time because it's much too late. Let me just conclude with a comment that the Rav made in the end of the Halachic Mind. Rav in the end of Halachic Mind sums up part of this philosophy when he says, We know that the most central concepts of medieval Jewish philosophy are rooted in ancient Greek and medieval Arabic thought and are not of Jewish origin at all. It is impossible to reconstruct a unique Jewish world, therefore, out of alien material. Even if we were able to demonstrate greater magnanimity and introduce modern Jewish philosophical advancements as a point for departure for the reconstruction of a Jewish world perspective, we would not meet the requirements of historical continuity. Since the time of the great medieval philosophers, Jewish philosophical thought has expressed itself only sporadically and then in fragmentary manner, and this largely upon premises which were more non-Jewish than Jewish. To this end, there is only a single source from which a Jewish philosophical Weltanschauung could emerge, the objective order, the halakha. And then the Rav goes on to describe why the halakha is that foundation. It would help us discriminate between the living and the dead in Jewish philosophy. What, for instance, is of halakhic nature in the Guide and Kuzari, what merely an echo of Platonic Aristotelian philosophy? The purpose of such an analysis is not to eliminate non-Jewish elements, far from it, for the blend of Greek and Jewish thought has oftentimes been truly magnificent. However, by tracing Jewish trends, comparing them to non-Jewish, we shall enrich our outlook and knowledge. Modern Jewish philosophy must be nurtured on the historical religious consciousness that has been projected onto a fixed objective screen. Out of the sources of halakha, a new worldview emerges. Fortuitously, I'll say in conclusion, my mother's yahrzeit falls on Hanukkah, a time that my mother cherished and whose themes are very much pertinent to her life and to her legacy. In her understated but consistent and impactful way, my mother was very much, I would say, a menorah personality. Her infectious inquisitiveness, her sense of wonder about varied dimensions of Hashem's world, underpinned her wide-ranging cultural interests, math and literature, both of which she taught, poetry, music, art, and her general adventurousness. She very much exemplified the multiple branches of the menorah and was diligent in sharing that with us. She was the one who dragged us to museums, piano lessons, encouraged us to cultivate very diverse interests. But more importantly, she was someone whose self-definition was unequivocally grounded in the Ikar of the menorah, the centrality of Jewish destiny, Jewish life, and its values. She was a miksha achas person, somebody who was authentic, constant, and consistent, possessed of a special integrity, her bearing of refinement and nobility, naturally, though unselfconsciously, flowing from that deep anchor in the Mesorah of her family. One of her few regrets was a lost opportunity to learn Torah seriously with her father, as her 2 decades older sister had. My grandfather was Nifter when my mother was very young, and she was equally wistful about being too late for that experience to benefit from the intensification of Talmud Torah for women that has become more common in subsequent years. She had great pride in the women of our family who do share in that advancement. Nonetheless, her menorah legacy is also a menorah, one that is equally compelling and impactful on her children, her students, and community. She imbibed the Mesorah of deep commitment, unshakable amunah, enthusiastic Avas Yisrael and Avas Eretz Yisrael in a truly impressive way, and she shared that very naturally. Her Dmus Dyukna continues to be imprinted in and on all of us. Her impact on all of us is unquestioned, precluding any possibility Shetikcha Torah. Her special personality and legacy, as my father said before, will never be lost. Yehi Zichra Baruch. Thank you.